I always had a passion for changing the world. I told my mom that when I was 6 years old. I told her I'm going to change the world. And I was so serious. She never forgot it. And she still tells me that. Very common now. Very frequently now. So it just came down to, I knew I was going to change the world. It was just what is going to do it. And I've always been ready. Like I said, with karate, I have that discipline. It gave me that discipline. Because don't get me wrong. With being 19, heck yeah, I don't want to just always be working. I don't always just want to be so serious. I do want to sometimes just have fun. But then I remember that all that is just temporary. And something that, and what I'm doing here is something that is permanent. Something that will be in history books. Something that will be in every single city in the world for the rest of all of human civilization. You are now part of the social experiment. See now where my limit is. Only got no.
It's like they just wanna see you struggle. I swear they don't wanna see you shine. They don't. It's like they just want you to bleed and they want you to fall. They don't want you to be where the streets are paved with gold.
Welcome to Mastermind, the home of Black excellence and self-mastery. Yes, your host, Mr. G.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Our next guest is an environmental activist, an innovator, and a humanitarian. And he's only 19 years old. His mission is to use the process of pyrolysis to create fuel from plastic, which would change and enhance the way that we use energy and even possibly solve the world's plastic problem. He has a following of people all over the world that are supporting his work. Let's welcome today the founder of Nature Jab and the innovator of microwave pyrolysis, Mr. Julian Brown, to the program. Mr. Brown, how you doing, man?
I'm doing extravagant, always grateful, very much appreciate you bringing me on to the show today.
So yeah, so Julian, man, you're 19 years old, but you're not the typical 19-year-old. So what exactly was it like that you experienced in life, man, that created the person that we have today, man?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate. I still am very fortunate to, you know, have been raised by both of my parents. And one of the huge parts in my life that really shaped me into who I am was karate class. I'm a black belt in karate, in American karate. And I took that class, like I'm a black belt, when I was 13, 14 years old. And early age, it taught me very important things like discipline, perseverance, you know, never giving up. And also, it really instilled an honor within me. You know, there's a lot of things in, the culture about honor that have to do with, you know, a lot of those different types of martial arts like that. And so that really put into me like the seeds that really I carried through everything I've done for the rest of my life. You know, honor, doing everything with honor, always pushing forward even when it's hard, and, having discipline to, you know, set aside your desires or set aside the easy route and go the uncomfortable route in everything in life, right? I remember when I started my karate class, my class was about 20 people, right? And, you know, people higher belts, people lower the belts than me. By the time I went to get my black belt, I was the only one left. All my other classmates had dropped out. And it showed me in life that, you know, you go down paths, be a leader, not a follower. Because a lot of people, if they're not as driven as you, not as committed, they'll just fall off, taper off. And it may seem like you're doing something wrong, but if you know what's right for you, you just keep going.
Gotcha. All right. So like growing up, were you experimenting with a lot of things and playing around with, you know, building things and, things like that? Or what kind of child were you?
Yeah, I was always building things with my hands. You know, I would always build with Lego blocks. And before Lego blocks, I would just, my sister used to have these Matthew C blocks, which are just like little like math blocks that they'd put together to teach kids how to count. And I'd just be building random things out of those, like boats and planes. And my mom would get mad at me. She was like, that's for your sister to learn. Because that was before I was even in school. That was like when I was before even pre-K. So anyways, I always been very agile with my hands, very proficient with my hands when it came to building. So I always did Lego blocks and all this stuff. Always was in little engineering courses. And then my junior and senior year of high school, I was in welding class. And that's what really took me to the next level, because now that's really building real application things, you know, with metal.
So what kind of things were you guys doing in the welding class?
Yeah, so in welding class, we really were just learning how to weld, you know, how to put together metal. Me, I took that ability to just learn how to put together metal to really just build things. So I would just be building just really art type things. Like I'd be building like Egyptian hieroglyphs and stuff. That's what taught me or really led me into building my first ever reactor, my first ever plastic to fuel reactor, having those abilities to weld, because that opens the door to so much, because metal is such an important and necessary resource in this field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned you were building things about, you know, ancient Egypt, man. So was that part of your interest growing up as well, like studying Black history and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, behind me here, you can see on my wall, I have hieroglyphs. These are hieroglyphs I cut out myself with a plasma torch in welding class, right? Scarab beetle, the Ankh, and the Eye of Horus. So,
cool.
Yeah, I've always been very much interested in the history of our people and the history of everybody, you know, and all inventors and humanitarians alike that have come in the past, because that's where the real wisdom is, you know. Sometimes we get so focused on modern technology, modern studies, that we forget that some of the most ancient practices are the most foundational ones, and they're the ones that are timeless.
Mm, well said, well said. All right. So, you know, COVID hit when you were about, 16 at that point in time? And I know you mentioned you started coming out with your whole process of the work that you're doing now with pyrolysis that we'll talk about in a second. But did COVID have some sort of impact on your thinking process behind what you decided to create and where you're at now?
COVID definitely incubated my thinking process even more, because it really put me more in a state of the world really needs this. You know, something I often say to people is one of the main motivating factors to what I do is I've always noticed the plastic problem. I've always been an environmentalist. But something that really pushed me over the edge to make me think that I need to do something about this is when in 2020, when COVID started, that same year, I read an article that said 3.4 billion masks were thrown in the ocean. That same year. So to me, that was just like unacceptable. And I was like, you know what? I know that there are already scientists doing things about this, but I'm done just sitting back waiting. I'm going to do something about this because it's just absurd. It doesn't seem like anything's being done.
Interesting. So, you know, you're still home while you're feeling all of this stuff. So walk us through that steps of you getting that inspiration, like, yo, I'm going to do something about this. And then it becoming an idea into what we have like right now.
So when I had that stage of, I want to do something about this, because, you know, for the record, masks are made of plastic. So it's all tackling the same problem. What really motivated me, well, that was what motivated me, but what really took me to the next level of making this an idea was then to start doing research, you know, because I utilized the state I was in. You know, we were indoors, didn't have much, couldn't really go outside, but we did have the internet. Most people, you know, spend time just watching Netflix and stuff. I spent time doing research papers, looking up what can be done, how. I had to ask my mind, how can we do this? Because plastic is such a huge thing. It doesn't biodegrade. If you burn it, it's toxic. What process exists out there that will let us truly, safely deal with this problem, eliminate plastic? And I knew it had to be possible because energy can't be destroyed nor created, right? There has to be a way to transform plastic into a more useful form of energy. And that's how I came across the process of pyrolysis. And that word broken down, it derives from Greek pyro and lysis. It means to break something apart with heat. Now, that is different from just burning something. In the process of pyrolysis, you break something down with heat without oxygen or without air. So instead of it catching on fire, because a fire needs air and oxygen, it instead breaks down chemically.
Got you. All right, so you're putting all that together. You're looking at research and things like that. What gave you the confidence and the idea that you can actually start putting things together physically on your own?
I saw a Instructables post on how to make a pyrolysis reactor. And there was a guy, he made it on like his stove. He didn't even weld it together. He just like, it was very crude, very simple. And then I did more research. I found a YouTuber named Hazel Kim. he had a more kind of complex video showing how he built one. Once again, very crude, very simple. And I was like, well, I have all these resources. I'm a welding student. I have this welding shop with all this metal. I know how to weld. So I was like, well, they built these very simple, crude ones. I will build one too. So it was never really a doubt in my mind of, can I build it? It was just a matter of, how can I build it? And that's what I looked up. How can you build it? Very simple. Because, you know, usually things like this, the first thing you think of is, you know, oh, that's gasoline and stuff. That's too big for me. I can't do that in my backyard, you know? Mm-hmm. But that was never even a thing on my mind. My mind was always in a state of, how can I do it?
Mm-hmm. All right. So I know you've mentioned that you've went in many different stages with the building, like in regards to, you know, developing the machine and everything. So walk us through kind of those stages into where you're at now and everything.
So it all started with a simple crude design. You know, like I said, pyrolysis is breaking down something with heat without oxygen. So very simple. It's just a metal container with a closed top and then pipes that come out for the vapors, because when we put the plastic in there without oxygen, it doesn't catch on fire. Instead, it breaks down into a vapor. It almost is like how water boils and turns to steam. Almost look at it like that. We're breaking down the plastic into a liquid, and then that liquid becomes like a steam form of plastic. So once it becomes that steam or that vapor of the plastic is where all the fuel is at that point. Plastic is made of petroleum or crude oil, just like gasoline is made from that, diesel. So look at plastic like the solid form of crude oil. It's almost like taking ice and putting it melting that ice into water and then evaporating that water into steam. That's essentially like what we're doing here, phase changing. So now we have converted that solid crude oil, which is plastic, back into vapor crude oil, and it goes through these plumbing pipes into a condenser. And condensation is the same process that clouds use to rain. So now that vapor condenses, right? And it becomes droplets of oil. And that oil is the gasoline, the diesel, the jet fuel, the same oils we get when we refine crude oil, because plastic is essentially the solid form of crude oil.
Mm. Now, when people think about, you know, microwave pyrolysis, which is something you've innovated, people might think about, well, do I just put plastic in the microwave and then boom, I got oil, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm ready to go. So what is the difference between doing that versus what it is that you're doing?
So once again, the basic pyrolysis reactor is you just have a metal container, you heat it up from the outside with a flame for that heat to travel from the flame to the reactor to the plastic, which is on the inside. Now, let's think about that. That's a three-way heat transfer. Inevitably, that is going to be inefficient. The outside of the reactor will always be hotter than the plastic on the inside. So when I built my first design and I noticed these things, I always knew that this technology had to change the world. And I always asked, why isn't it already being done? And that was because of things like that, inefficiencies, right? Because this is old technology. I looked it up on Google to find it. It's not some crazy esoteric hidden thing. So then I started to ask myself, okay, how can we make this more efficient? And I looked at things. I looked around my house. What is the most efficient heating thing in your house? A microwave heats things up so quickly. You know, you burn chocolate, burn popcorn in there, just walking away for a little bit, right? So then that's when I started to think, okay, let's use microwaves. Now, here's the thing about microwaves, right? The microwaves do not naturally interact with plastic. So the difference between you just putting plastic in your microwave and what I'm doing is, you know, that little food cover you put in your microwave, that is made of plastic. It doesn't heat up in the microwave, right? I had to design my machine to essentially allow plastic to now interact with microwaves and be heated up. Another huge reason is microwaves are not airtight. They have gaps and vents. Air gets in there. If you put plastic in a microwave, it's just going to catch on fire if it does heat up to begin with. When you put plastic in this reactor with the microwaves, it can't catch on fire. There's no oxygen. It is completely airtight and sealed. So I got to that level of innovation with the microwaves. I built my first machine, my first ever microwave pyrolysis reactor. It was basically like a box. because I was experimenting using just microwaves that I would get from a scrapyard, and I would just put plastic in there and stuff. And the biggest issue was always it was not airtight, so it'd just be a fire in there. And I built my first ever machine, and it worked well. There were a lot of things that had to be done with the machine to make it better. One of the primary things is your microwave. It has that spinning thing in it, the turntable, right? Now, why does the microwave have the turntable? That is because it allows for even heating of what's put in there. Even heating as well as agitation of what you put in there. So it's not just one spot being heated versus all the other spots. Because that's a huge issue with microwave heating. It's called hot spots, where just one spot will get super hot, but the rest isn't cold, you know? Like you bite into the middle of a hot pocket, the outside is frozen, the inside is lava, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
we don't want that, because that's the equivalent of, we put plastic into this reactor, the middle of it is completely turned to fuel and vaporized while the outside is still just plastic. So now I had to innovate a design within the microwave reactor, which will allow the plastic to be agitated just like turntables do.
Got you. So with that innovation, there's nobody else that kind of does the pyrolysis process in that way like you? So that's what your patent is about?
Yeah, my patent is about the innovation of being able to utilize the microwaves in combination with that agitation device.
All right. Interesting. Now, you know, some people kind of argue about this whole pyrolysis process in regards to using waste, plastic, and things like that for energy. So I wanted to kind of know what your thoughts were on people that saying that, well, this whole process is releasing CO2 into the atmosphere. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
what do you think about that?
I believe that CO2 is truly not our issue, especially when it comes to something like this. If we're going to release CO2 and in return for cleaning up our oceans, getting the microplastics out of our bodies and all this, I think it's worth it. And here's why. CO2 is what every plant breathes to grow. There are plenty of ways to deal with CO2. Plant more trees, carbon capture machines, right? CO2 is an essential part of life. Algae ponds, seaweed, just so many ways to deal with CO2 that are also beneficial. You know, something I want to do is when this company becomes a multi-trillion-dollar company, I want to plant 1 trillion trees around the world, you know, especially the Amazon rainforest. You can offset carbon in so many ways, but this process also offsets carbon on its own. So when we put the plastic in this machine, it does not catch on fire. What do you usually have after a fire? You have ashes, which are literally just inorganic metals and stuff. With this process, since there is no fire, there are no ashes. Instead, the leftover product that's in the machine is pure carbon. Solid carbon. That's CO2 that would have been in the air. Say we burned the plastic or just left it out in the environment. Now it's a solid carbon product that now we can bury this, sequestering the carbon. Now we can put it in concrete, sequestering it, put it in tires, sequestering it. So this process already solves that problem. And on top of that, a research paper was put out proving that when plastic is just left in the environment, in the oceans or in landfills, it emits ethylene and ethane, which are greenhouse gases, which are actually worse than CO2, and that's just going to waste, right? With this process, yes, we may be emitting CO2 with this fuel is created, but it actually ends up being better than just leaving it out in the environment. For one, for the sake of our own health, our bodies, the planet's health, the eyesores, but for two, from the greenhouse gas perspective, because we can plant trees to deal with carbon, but we can't necessarily plant trees to deal with ethylene, ethane, methane, those really a lot more potent greenhouse gases.
Got it. All right. What do you say to those that are like, well, you know, this sounds all good, but it's taking way more energy in order to do this than it is producing. You know, some people think it takes more energy to perform pyrolysis than the energy that comes out of it. So what are your thoughts
Absolutely.
On that?
Absolutely. And that was one of the reasons that I realized why this wasn't being done at the world scale, the scale that we needed to be done, because that was always the issue with efficiency. And that was the whole point of getting to the point of using microwaves, because they're so much more efficient. Like literally the oven, even the air fryers have nothing on how quick microwaves are, nothing how efficient they are, right? I built this reactor in my backyard out of scrap parts. Literally handmade everything. And despite that, with my results, I was getting more energy out of the plastic than the energy it took to get extract that energy. And of course, from a scientific viewpoint, that's not possible. It breaks the laws of thermodynamics. However, it does not, because it's not creating energy. What it is plastic is made of crude oil. It's very energy dense. And the reaction becomes self-sustaining once it gets to a certain temperature. So in short, with the use of microwaves and the heavy energy density of plastic, this machine is very, very efficient, and it does not create, but rather it extracts more energy out of the plastic than the energy it takes to extract that much.
Interesting. Now, most people don't think about plastic in the source of like energy and exactly what it has. So what is in plastic that's giving you back that energy?
Yeah, once again, with it being the form of crude oil or made from crude oil, that is literally what it is. To not get too chemistry here, in short, look at it like this, right? The reason why plastic isn't biodegradable is because when you look at the atomic chains of it, which are essentially like, think about like the molecules of plastic. The molecules of plastic are like this long, right? While the molecules of something like wood are like this long. So wood can be broken down by bacteria and stuff because it's short. Plastic's too big, but the bigger the chain gets, the more energy is in that. So the chain of plastic being this big is actually bigger than gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plastic has more energy in it per pound or per whatever than the fuels we use to currently run our world. So with all that energy in plastic, that's just because it's made from crude oil. Right. Mm-hmm. And crude oil is a mix of a whole bunch of different long chains, short chains, gasoline, diesel, all this stuff. And just like plastic is kind of like the amalgamation of all of it put together into a solid form. So that's where all the energy comes from.
Man, you should have been my science teacher, man. It's fascinating that you are not currently in college right now or on a full scholarship somewhere or anything like that. Do you have a mentor that has taught you these things, or is it all self-taught?
It has all been self-taught.
That is fascinating, man. Man, interesting. All right. So what do you say to those people that are like, you could be on a full scholarship going somewhere to study biology, chemistry, engineering, and that could impact how you're doing your work right now. It could improve it. Maybe they might even want to take up what you're doing and everything. What do you say to that?
Currently I'm just on this mission where the world really needs this. And I frankly see it as people go to college to work on things like this. I'm already working on things like this. So I just don't really see the point because I can go get a full ride scholarship, go 4 years to college or whatever, just to get out, just to continue working on this. And it's like, well, that was 4 years I could have just put into this. Where would this have been in 4 years? I have such ambition that in 4 years, I want this to be all over America. I want this to be all over the world within 10 years. I want this to be literally a household thing in 10 years where like everybody knows, oh, you have plastic, just put it in the nature jab bin. It's going to go get take. Like, those are my goals, my ambitions. I just don't have 4 years just to spend somewhere just to return to this. Everything I'm doing needs to be building towards this directly. Like college, yes. It definitely can help with the connections you get, the professors, even learning deeper about chemistry. But then at the same time, I look at it like this. There are people who already have gone to college. Let me just hire them, That's how I more see it. Because this is a very dire issue and it needs to be solved and needs to be very efficient with how we're moving at solving this because these big companies aren't doing it. So I just see it as that. And it's not that I'm against college or anything, but I just don't see the point for me to go when I could have just been spending all that time and money on this.
Now, everybody doesn't know about the plastic issue. So you might be saying like, this is a dire issue. It has to get fixed in this and that and the third. And the average person might be like, what do you mean? I recycle my plastic all the time. Like, you know what I'm saying? I put it in the recycling bin and it gets recycled and bought in as something else. And I always do that. I don't throw it in the trash or the garbage. So what is this massive issue that Julian Brown is talking about?
Yeah, it's almost like the dot-com bubble. What it is we put our plastic in the recycle bin thinking it's getting recycled. But actually, most of the time what happens it used to all get sent to China. But a couple years ago, China said, no, we're done taking your plastic. Because they tried to make recycling profitable. It failed. Now what happens is most of your plastic you put in your recycle bin, it gets sent to nations in Africa, sent to poor nations in Asia. And now what happens is they have nothing to do with it but to either burn it or just put it in rivers. So now it's either ending up as air pollution or ended up in the ocean. Here's the statistics. Just a little bit ago, the statistics were less than 6% of plastics are being actually recycled.
Wow.
Yeah. And I checked it again, and now it's even less than that. I think it's down to 4%. So in short, almost no plastic is getting recycled, right? That's just true. There's tons of stories of people saying, I went to my landfill, and I saw the recycling truck pull up right next to the landfill truck, dump the recycled plastic in the same area.
Wow.
Most plastic just doesn't get recycled, and that is because, for one, it's not profitable, and for two, most plastic cannot be recycled. It's dirty. It's contaminated with food or oils or grease. Just like how they don't recycle pizza boxes because there's grease in them and stuff. With the plastic, if it's not almost in pure condition, they don't recycle it. You know, even in when you go to stores, like my Kroger recently put this recycled plastic box up for shopping bags. They say, only clean and dry plastic. How much plastic do you have in your house that is clean and dry? And it's dirty and you go to clean it when now it's not dry, right? So this process that I have innovated has no limits. It can take all types of plastic. So we're in this dire situation because all of this plastic we keep sending to all these nations keeps ending up in the ocean, keeps ending up in the air because they're burning it. It's only getting worse and worse. Plastic production is ramping up, and it's going to hit a point of just absolute insanity very soon unless things are done. Like I said, 2020. How did all those masks end up in the ocean? 3.4 billion. That is insane, right? The year it started, the year COVID started, like it wasn't the second or the third year, the same year it started, multiple billion masks were thrown in the ocean. So clearly we're running into huge issues, and it may be hard to see the long-term effects, like, oh, there's a mask in the middle of the ocean, who cares? But then microplastics were just found in human blood for the first time, I believe, last year.
I heard about that.
It's already having an effect on us already. And it's only going to get worse. And we don't need to get to the point where we're trying to solve it once it gets horrible. No, let's start to solve it now before it gets to that point.
Hmm. So, you know, this might seem like something very simple, like somebody could have created this this pyrolysis, microwave pyrolysis that you have right now. Why do you think it hasn't been innovated already? And why do you think some of the plastic issue is as bad as it is and it hasn't been solved? I mean, you're 19 years old, man. Like, to be thinking about solving this when we have scientists all over the world that are, you know, working on all type of things. They haven't solved this major, massive issue. Like, why do you think that is?
It ultimately comes down to, you know, companies are all about maximizing profitability, maximizing growth. It is still more economically viable and easier to just mine crude oil from the ground. It will make you more money to do that than it will to do this process. Not saying this process isn't profitable, not saying that it doesn't work, but if you're thinking purely capitalistically, it's easier to just get the oil from the ground, make new plastic, throw it in the ocean. But if you start to think for humanity's sake, for the environment's sake, beyond just profits and money, then you start to realize the true value in this. Then you start to realize this is a $1 trillion industry, because now we're not just solving a niche problem, we're doing something that's going to help all of humanity forever, because this is a technology that once it's in the market, it's going to be applied forever. For the rest of generations, for the rest of Earth, for the rest of all of civilization, we needed a technology that truly and efficiently recovers that waste, closes that cycle, because in society, we're growing so fast, we're producing so much, but we're creating so much waste. This closes that loop. This solves that issue. This is for all of humanity right here. And when you realize that, then you realize, okay, this is worth it. But the thing is, just in the moment, it doesn't look that attractive to people because they're like, well, I'd rather just invest my money in an oil company, which is going to make a 4X return overnight versus this might make a 4X return in 4 years. That's the type of situation.
Right. So why do you think they would care about using something like pyrolysis as opposed to like, yo, we're just gonna keep doing what we've been doing? You know?
Because now people around the world are really starting to wake up to the issue and they're very angry. Governments are starting to subsidize things like this, and governments are starting to regulate plastic oil companies and stuff, and it's starting, you know, plastic bans are happening everywhere, and now if these companies and all don't get to the point where they want to support a technology like this and they just keep making plastic is going to end up getting banned, and now they don't have any source of money. But if they support a technology like this, now that we have an alternative solution to deal with our plastic waste, now plastic can keep being created. It won't get banned everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. So this is really great for everybody. This is a win-win for everybody, but we just have to open our mindset to the perspective of it's not about profits from the get-go.
Right, right. Okay. I've been listening to some of your YouTube lives too, and you're getting people interested all over the world that are coming to you, asking you how to do it from where they are, from Trinidad, from different parts of Africa and places like that. So what have those conversations been like? And I know you mentioned too in a previous interview that there are certain parts of Africa that, are pretty much waiting for you to finish, you know, building this thing so that they'll be able to utilize it. So what are these conversations that you're having?
Yeah, it's always, it almost saddens me that that's how it is, you know, where it's a point where nations are so plagued by plastic waste that they're begging for a technology like this. Because like I said, a lot of those nations, either they're like islands where they just don't have landfill space to do this, or they're places that have imported a lot of Americans' plastic waste and stuff. So it's just like all those conversations come down to, a humanitarian thing. These countries are so desperate because they're like, plastic waste is truly destroying our nation. That's something we don't see in America. We don't see those, how deep it goes. Us, we're like, it's just trash. What's the big deal? But when you have something that's so, it doesn't just die, you know, it's non-biodegradable. It really has a huge impact. It gets in your blood and gets in your food and leaches toxins, and burning it is putting all these emissions in the air, littering all over the forests and in the rivers and stuff. It's an absolute mess that we don't even truly see and experience to that deep of a level here in America or even in most first world nations, right? So when I hear all these things from these people from different nations telling me they would just love to have this, it inspires me even more to work even harder, to go even quicker, because I understand this is a fight for humanity.
Got you. So as you know, too, there's other environmental issues that exist. We got water pollution, air pollution, soil degradation, habitat loss, ozone depletion, biodiversity issues. So do you think that solving this problem can help solve these other problems as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because when you have this technology, air pollution will get better because now we're not having to burn the plastic anymore. That's one. And then after that, you have the issue of biodiversity. Well, now there's not going to be more plastic than fish in the ocean. Now there won't be seagulls full of plastic in their belly dying to this. You know, now there won't be, the crazy issues of just huge mounds of landfills being burned. And then all these emissions and toxins are thrown in the air, which is killing all these animals. So, and then now we don't have to make as many landfills, destroying habitats, you know, and then now our waste is so much more efficiently used. We're getting so much more energy, and we're not expending as much energy just to get rid of waste. Like, do you ever think about how much energy it takes to truly get rid of waste to begin with, to take it to a landfill, to ship it across seas? So much energy. And to think about all the energy that's in the waste itself. When you put all that together, we're at a loss. We are at a loss right now of energy, because then you have to account for all the energy it took to make the product to get to begin with that you're throwing away. So when you account for all of that, you know, we live in a world that is energy. We live in a universe that's all about energy. So when you get to things that solve the energy, that's the root cause. And now everything else will blossom out from it. All these other problems that we're having will start to, the solution will become clearer.
Right. That makes sense. What do you say to folks that are like, yo, yeah, this kid is 19 years old, man. Like, you know, shouldn't you be out partying, clubbing, like enjoying life? And like, you're way too serious for 19 years old, man. You don't want to be one of those 40-year-olds at the club, you know, waiting at the club, trying to pick up girls and things like that. So what do you say to those that say like, yo, slow down, man. Like, you're 19, man. You're too young to be worrying about solving the world's problems and trying to fix issues in the world, man. Just enjoy your life a little bit, man. Live a little bit. You started this thing when you were 16, man. You don't even fully mature until you're 25. Like, what do you say to that? People that say that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get that for sure. Life is all about balance. If I'm all about work and all this, it's not good for me. But at the same time, I believe that your youth is the most important prime time you have, because you have the ability of not necessarily having to worry about all of the payments, all the bills, all the mortgage. Like I said, I still live with my parents. If I was living on my own right now, if I waited to do this until I was 25, I probably wouldn't have done this as soon as I did, because I'd have all these bills. Mm. I have a family to deal with and have to pay for. And, you know, so I just see it as a great opportunity. I always saw it as, you know, yeah, there's all those fun things you can do in life, but those will always be around. But let me tell you, it won't be around if something isn't being done. Our planet is not going to be around if we're not doing something.
Great point.
I've always been an old soul. I've always been very wise, always very perspicacious, can see things far ahead and make decisions that are best on what weighs the most. And I always had a passion for changing the world. I told my mom that when I was 6 years old. I told her I'm going to change the world. And I was so serious. She never forgot it. And she still tells me that. Very common now, very frequently now. So it just came down to, I knew I was going to change the world. It was just what is going to do it. And I've always been ready. Like I said, with karate, I have that discipline. It gave me that discipline, because don't get me wrong, with me being 19, heck yeah, I don't want to just always be working. I don't always just want to be so serious. I do want to sometimes just have fun. But then I remember that all that is just temporary, and something that, and what I'm doing here is something that is permanent, something that will be in history books, something that will be in every single city in the world for the rest of all of human civilization. And I can always go back and do these other things later. Even if I am a 40-year-old in the club, at least there's a club to go to.
Well said, man. Well said. All right. Now, a lot of people have been saying like, yo, we got to protect this guy. We got to protect this guy. I mean, you're talking about saving the world right now, like with your invention and solving a lot of issues that have been around for years and years. So what do you say to those that are like, yo, you got to really be careful. You know, your life could be in danger and things like that. Like, do you look at it from that lens? Do you think about things like that?
I certainly have become more aware of safety now that I've been like recognized a few times in public and all. But I don't look at it from a perspective of fear at all. I don't look at it as my life is at risk for doing this, so I'm not going to do it. And I'm aware of how the world works. I'm aware of how money works, how even envious people work. And it is, of course, a risk what I'm doing, but that's not going to stop me from doing it, because this is necessary. And I also have a very strong faith in that, since my heart is in the right place, my intentions are pure, I'm doing this for humanity, that, you know, just good things are going to happen, right? And I'm just going to be in the right spots at the right time. I'm always going to be safe. I'm always going to be protected when I need to. And if I'm not, then so be it. But I'm not going to let that be a thing where I don't do this, because if I live my whole life in fear of what could happen, then I'm not living, you know? At least I'm really giving this my all while I'm around to do that. And that's how I see it.
Mm. Interesting. All right. Another form of protecting yourself too, not just from that, but from the work that you're doing. I mean, the work that you're doing isn't the safest work. You know, you said you almost blew up your house almost, you know, doing this stuff, man. What measures do you take to kind of protect yourself and to prevent, you know, major injuries and things like that from happening while you're trying to do this?
Certainly learning so much from my mistakes. Every single accident that happens can be analyzed and broken down so many ways, you know, in so many scientific ways and all. Like, for example, I've had a reactor explode on me. Why did it explode? Because there was oxygen and air in there. What do I say is one of the key principles of this process? No oxygen, no air, right? So then that taught me, okay, when this is built industrially, make sure that there's oxygen sensors in the reactor to make sure we know when all the oxygen's out. When I had the reactor burn down and almost catch my house on fire. Why did that happen? Because my circuit breaker didn't flip. It was an electrical fire. What did that teach me? Have two circuit breakers. So if one doesn't work, the other one works, right? So when it comes down to just being safe with this, it just comes down to, you know, learning the small mistakes so that way they're not the big mistakes that really do damage. Because imagine if I had this at a huge industrial scale and had oxygen in there. Now it's a bomb, like straight up, you know, versus, oh, it was just a little small explosion at my house. Oh, it was a fire that almost burned down my house versus a fire that almost burns down the whole county, right? You got it. So it just comes down to really learning from the small mistakes and, you know, applying scientific principles and hiring the right people that have already experienced things, you know, hiring the right type of engineers to check things, code people to make sure. So that way everything is set in place properly. Because like I said, I want this in every city on the in the world. And it has to be a very safe and very easy to operate machine for that to be the case.
Hmm. All right. So paint that picture for us with the perfect, you know, machine that you created. And this is going, everything is going according to plan. 30, 40 years later, what are we looking at?
Yeah, I didn't even see it as 34. I see 10, 15 years. I see it as a machine that's, you know, like I said, it's in every city in the world. I see it as not necessarily a huge, big machine, but like a more small, compact machine, probably around like the size of, you know, maybe like a couple trailers, size of it, like a couple shipping containers. Not a huge machine, because it's going to be so many of them around that you don't need just one huge centralized machine. And I see it as a very simple operation. It's operated all through computers, maybe even AI, where you pretty much just put plastic in there, you know, you get the plastic loaded from wherever, and it does everything else for you. It gets the fuel out for you. Everything else is done safely, automated, continuous, meaning like, you know, you're loading plastic in and it just keeps going. You don't have to like load in one bit and then wait for that to finish. You can just continuously put plastic in, and then that's just the process just everywhere. And it just becomes such a second thought that like anybody can just walk by and just chuck their plastic in and it just does it for them. You know, it's just operating 24/7.
Hmm. And what do you think that does for countries all over the world, for people all over the world?
It's going to just completely change all of humanity, because now our perspective on trash and waste will change altogether, knowing that this plastic bottle here that I would normally just throw away or litter could literally fuel my car tomorrow. It's going to change so much for the better to have that perspective of this is energy, and also knowing that something good is being done with it. So people will be naturally incentivized to no longer litter. People will be naturally incentivized to bring their plastic to this place. And it's going to clean up the environment so much, because now people have more of an incentive to clean up litter, knowing that it just won't end up in the landfill, which is basically just a giant pit of litter. Now something's actually happening to it for the better. And now ocean cleanup projects with the big ships and stuff that are getting plastic out of the ocean, now they have a place to put that ocean plastic other than just putting it back in landfills, you know?
Right, right. Powerful, man. Powerful. All right, before we wrap up, I kind of wanted to do a quick activity here called What's Your Favorite? Identifying a few of your favorite things. You can elaborate if you want. You can keep it short and sweet. So what's the favorite piece of advice that you've gotten from, you know, some people that have been following your work? You've got quite a lot of people that's looking on all over the world, you know, to what you're doing.
Just never give up.
Got you. Favorite books that you've read so far?
I love the book, The Four Agreements.
Oh, that's a good one. Yep.
Yeah, I also really love the Bible, a lot of wisdom in there. I also love, there's this book called Buddha's Brain. And it's like kind of like breaking down how Buddha thought and his way of thinking and stuff. I really like that book.
I got to check that. Buddha's Wisdom. I check that one
out.
Yeah,
Buddha's Brain. That's what it's
Buddha's
called.
Brain. Buddha's Brain. All right. I check that one out. What's your favorite lesson that you've learned from martial arts?
Yeah, with martial arts, my favorite lesson is just the lesson of discipline and perseverance. You know, and there were two katas. You know, and a form is like a variety of techniques we do. And there were two forms that were literally named those things, discipline and perseverance. And those are my favorite things I learned for sure.
Mm, okay. What is your favorite thing about the environment and nature?
The connection that you can have with nature when you really, you know, just sit down and take time to isolate yourself there. There's so much to learn. You observe the trees and stuff. Every single lesson on earth is in nature.
Mm-hmm. All right. Favorite thing to do other than, you know, the work that you're doing?
My favorite thing to do is basically almost anything involved in nature, gardening. Also, I do like playing bass guitar and stuff. So I have a couple hobbies.
Okay. Favorite thing about Black history?
I think that my favorite thing is the unifying nature of it, how it unifies us as a people.
Gotcha. Do you have a favorite show or movie, like talking about nature or any environmental issues?
One of my favorite movies is V for Vendetta. I really like that movie because it's about, you know, kind of like being a fighter for justice.
Mm. All right. What's your favorite life gem that anybody has given you?
I would say really just a lot of the ways how my mother has raised me with, you know, having honor and integrity in everything I do. I think that was my biggest life gem because I believe that when you always have honor and integrity with what you do, that you like are reciprocating like good karma, good energy, and that returns to you.
Mm, got you, got you. Man, you got me thinking, man. Very interesting. If you could sit down with anyone, who would be your favorite person to sit down and chat with, dead or alive?
I really want to talk with Nikola Tesla.
Mm, I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Nikola Tesla, do you have any favorite inventors outside of him?
Oh, what was his name? He's the man with the peanuts. Carver. George Washington Carver. Yeah, much respect to him. Somebody else. Their names are not coming to me. But yes, I do have some other inventors I look up to. Nikola Tesla is one of my biggest inspirations because he was a humanitarian as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Man, I'm just so inspired, man, just listening to you at 19. And you have so much more to give the world and so much more to go. So what is the legacy, man, that you're trying to create? It's kind of feels weird asking a 19-year-old that, but you're not a typical 19-year-old. So what is the legacy, man, that you want to create in this world, man? What do you want people to know about the work that you've done, you're doing, and you did?
I want to inspire people. You know, with me being a 19 and having the relentless nature of nothing will hold me back. You know, I don't care about my age. I don't care about what people around me are doing. I want to do this because I see it. I know what's right. I want that to inspire people. You know, if I'm able to do this at 19 with these resources, imagine what somebody can do even younger than me, right? Or even older than me. I just want to inspire people at the end of the day with my legacy because that's probably the best thing you can do. It's not necessarily you. It's the idea. And that's what I want to plant. I want to plant a seed of an idea that you are the only thing holding you back.
Hmm. Powerful, powerful. Can you share with people like how they can assist you for those that are like, yo, I got to help this dude. I got to send him something or whatever it is. How can people find you and help you?
Yes. Yeah, so you can look up on my Instagram, naturejab_, or on TikTok, naturejab, YouTube, naturejab, nature, J-A-B. And I have links to, you know, my GoFundMe on there to help me raise money for this next machine I'm building. Also, from there, you can find my website where you can apply to be an investor or you can apply to be a team member as well, where you can be a part of my team in helping us really build this for the, you know, to really change the world. So there's many different avenues that I'm accepting people to help in whatever way they can.
Mm. How much do the machines cost to build anyway?
Well, I'm looking at scaling up. The last one I built at my house cost about $4,000. Next one I'm looking at building is going to cost around $300,000.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So you're collecting for that $300,000?
You're right.
Right now. Got you. All right. So you looking for major investors to buy into it?
I'm looking for, you know, investors, but also the crowdfunding route as well. Do definitely have to be careful with equity in the beginning, not giving up too much, because I know the value of this. Investors know the value, so they want to get an early big bite, to say the least. Mm. And if I'm not being perspicacious enough to see far in the future, then, you know, I'll give up way too much and I'll regret it later.
Right, right. I know this is something you want to do to help the world, but is it something that you're trying to give out for free, or what's your goals with that?
Like, I definitely want to license and franchise it to anybody that wants to be able to do it. ultimately, I would like to make it open source, but I don't know if that's the best route just for the sake of, you know, not everybody has the best intentions, right, with what, mm-hmm. what they do. So I do want to, in a way, keep it protected because I know that I will always have the right intentions. But at the same time, I want people with the right intentions to have access to this technology.
Man, that is powerful, man. I'm excited for the future for you, man, and to see where this all goes. Hopefully, when everything is, you know, is set 10, 15 years from now, we come back on Mastermind for another interview talking about like, yo, you talked about this 10 years ago and now we're doing it. Like, <yeah. laughs> you know what I mean? So definitely going to be following your work, man. And I'm inspired. Hopefully, listeners, you're inspired by 19-year-old trying to change the world. And I feel like a lot of elders, adults, like, yo, what are these kids doing? And this and that and the third, look at them and this and that. But there are people out there like you, man, like that is just different on a different wavelength, man, and trying to, you know, make things happen, man. So I appreciate that, man. I think for some of the elders in the community, it gives hope that, you know, there are still young people out there that have that old soul and are trying to make some positive changes, man. So I appreciate that, man.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for having me on, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And can you do us one last favor and leave us with your favorite quote and what it means to you?
All right. My favorite quote is, my foundation is impervious. My drive is inequitable. And my success is inevitable.
Dope. Man, you're going to need to write a book, man, because I'm trying to get some more gems, man.
I will.
Yes, sir. Definitely going to have you back on as an author, man. Not just innovator, but author. yeah, I appreciate you, man. So we'll be following listeners. If you are not inspired, I don't know what to tell you. Julian Brown, 19-year-old, trying to change the world. All right. Support him. Support his work. Follow him. What are your channels for people to follow you?
Nature Jab. Nature J-A-B. And on Instagram, it is Nature Jab _.
There it is. Hopefully we have Julian back on and he can tell us his progress and the new work eventually with what he's doing because it is continuous. Support the work, donate. Let's support this young man and support positive Black innovators that are making Black history right now. And of course, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I will see you next time on Mastermind. So every day I'm going hard. I'm talking business, bank accounts, and credit cards. And somehow we defeat the odds and making sure that no one starves. Illegal, or you had a